What's the fastest anybody's done on the motorway?
95.
And then you woke up. You
must be dreaming out of your cotton picking mind.
Today we do the ton. And holding.
But that's suicide.
So?
Well, hell, you've got to go sometime. Which way, Tom?
Through the town first, I think.
Junk Food Dinner, Episode 9. This week we cause trouble with an undead British biker gang in 1973's Psychomania. Then we battle not one, not two, but 12 mutant killers in 1986's Neon Maniacs. And finally, we get stopped by a garden shear-wielding murderer in the overlooked summer camp slasher, The Burning, from 1981.
You guys are a real bunch of wimps, you know that? You guys make me sick.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, Episode 9. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television, looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. I'm Kevin Moss. I'm joined by my co-hosts Mark Fredo and Parker Bowman. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table and recall our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and in arguing why or why we did not enjoy it. This week, we'll raise hell with a bunch of undead British bikers in Psychomania from 1973. Then we take on not one, not two, but 12 unique mutant murderers in the 1986 horror flick Neon Maniacs. And finally, we take a look at the often forgotten but highly entertaining star-studded summer camp slasher The Burning from 1981. But first, gentlemen, how you doing this week?
I'm good.
Doing okay?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, sorry for the lack of episode last week. I was on vacation in Portland, and I left it in what I thought was the capable hands of these gentlemen, but you disappoint.
Yeah, that's simply not the case, sir.
All right. I'll give you a pass this time. But did you
do it for yourselves?
Did you guys enjoy your week off?
Yeah, I watched the Lost finale, so, you know, that was pretty good.
Yeah, you're a big Lost fan. Now, Parker, do you follow Lost at all?
I did for the first four seasons, and then I realized I was wasting my life doing this.
Right.
I realized that I had many more things I could be doing with that hour a week, like stabbing myself.
I thought you were going to say watching Dollhouse.
Yeah, I actually Dollhouse. I watched the first episode, and then didn't watch any more of that.
Yeah, I feel like I never chose to follow Lost, but it always kind of got forced upon me because I have so many friends that like Lost. And I've never sat down to like watch an episode on my own, but I'd always show up to friends' house and it'd be Lost night, and I'd have to kind of comply and watch with them. So I feel like I know a little bit about it by proxy, but never a big follower myself. So I didn't see the finale or anything; wasn't that caught up in it. But I've heard all the hype about it. So where
you can really get into detail about it.
So just in general, Mark, were you pleased with the finale of Lost?
I was in general pleased with the finale of Lost, yes. Without getting further into it.
Yeah.
Say I was generally pleased.
Cool.
I think that's the same attitude that the writers have towards the finale. Let's not get into too much detail. Let's just put some vague things out there.
But yeah, I had a good trip, went out to Portland last week, saw some friends out there. I had never been to that part of the country before. It was very nice. The weather was left a little something to be desired. It was pretty much cold and rainy the entire time we were up there, but I figure that's pretty much the standard climate in those parts, so, you know, pretty much to be expected. But I had a lot of fun, ate a lot of good food, went to a place called Voodoo Donuts where they have all kinds of crazy donuts, had a, you know, grape-flavored donut and a donut shaped like a dick, and yeah, that was a lot of fun. Did a lot of shopping, picked up a bunch of records. I picked up a couple really cool books, actually. I picked up the Splatter Movie Guide by John McCarty. I don't know if you guys have ever read that.
Awesome.
I picked up Big Bosoms and Square Jaws, the biography of Russ Meyer by Jimmy McDonough, which looks pretty good. And then I picked up Joe Bob Briggs' Profoundly Disturbing, Shocking Movies, which I read almost in its entirety on the plane ride home, and it's fucking amazing. I think Joe Bob Briggs is like maybe one of the best film critics ever. I could read his shit forever.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I saw that. I actually saw that book at Half Price Books, and I thought about picking it up, but I bet I got something stupid instead.
Yeah, no, it's really good. If you haven't read it yet, I highly recommend it. He like each chapter is about a different movie that kind of was shocking for some reason. You know, it's stuff like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Deep Throat and, you know, stuff like that. So it's really cool.
Excellent.
Also, I'd like to wish a special birthday wish to our friend and listener, DJ Miller, who turned 30 this week. Saw him this weekend and, you know, raised a glass to him leaving his 20s. But, yeah, I'd like to say happy birthday to DJ, and I know he listens every week, so happy birthday, sir.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, actually, yeah, happy birthday to him. I saw him last night, and he was real bummed out that we didn't do an episode last week. He, like, got all up on my face and started hitting me.
Oh, yeah. See, yeah. That's the kind of dedication I like
that's the kind
amongst
of
our listeners. Yeah,
I would have countered with, he didn't do our show for us either, though, so.
Right.
Who's really at fault?
Yeah.
All right, so, well, at this time, I'd like to get into nerd news. Yeah! That's my intro for nerd news now.
Every week?
Yeah, I'm going to go, nerd news, yeah! So, until I come up with a cool little sound montage to replace it. But for now, that's what we got. So yeah, nerd news, let's do it. So this week, we got a couple sad pieces of news in the nerd news category. Of course, the big news in the film industry this week is that Dennis Hopper, legendary film actor, died this week. He had a, you know, long bout with prostate cancer. But of course, you know, Dennis Hopper is famous for, you know, movies like Easy Rider and Blue Velvet and Apocalypse Now. He's also done a lot of cool genre stuff like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and, you know, let's not forget Super Mario Brothers, the movie. But yeah, so I was sad to hear that. It was kind of not a surprise. I'd been hearing for what seemed like months that he was battling health problems, and it seemed like it was pretty inevitable. Something that was going to happen down the line, but still sad to see him go. Definitely a really good actor. He's, you know, been in the business for years and done a lot of really good movies. So what are some of your guys' favorite Dennis Hopper movies?
True Romance, without a doubt. That's,
oh yeah,
I love that movie.
Yeah,
I have recorded that movie off of HBO when I was like 13 or something and wore it out. Like, it became just static after.
Yeah, and his performance in that movie is really good. Mark, what about you?
Oh, I was definitely going to say True Romance. The movie's just all around,
yeah,
fantastic. But probably not Super Mario Brothers.
No.
Waterworld.
Yeah. And he was a badass in Speed too. I loved his performance in Speed. He was a great, great villain in that.
That's true.
But yeah, I love Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. A lot that gets shit on a lot, but I think it's a really fun movie, and I think Dennis Hopper's performance in it is definitely worth checking out if you haven't seen it. And of course, you know, Easy Rider and Blue Velvet are classics, so you can't really. But yeah, sad to see you go, buddy. But, you know, you had a long run and you're a total wild man, so we salute you. Also, we have the sad news that television actor Gary Coleman died at the age of 42 this week of a brain hemorrhage. Of course, Gary Coleman, best known as Arnold on Different Strokes and, his, you know, the lovable little brother on that show. And then after the show, like many of the other child actors on that show, he had a huge list of problems after the, you know, his fame and money ran out. You know, appearances in court, and I guess he beat up some lady at one point and, you know, filed for bankruptcy. He even ran for governor of California in that wacky 2003 governor race. But yeah, so, I mean, not, you know, obviously kind of more of a pop culture punchline than anything else, but nevertheless, you know, sad to see you go, Mr. Coleman. Do you guys have any fond Gary Coleman memories?
I think my fondest Gary Coleman memory, aside from all the times we went out drinking together, was when he was on The Simpsons for that Christmas episode, and like at the end when everybody's all happy, he like looks at the, you know, at the audience and says, "What you talking about, everyone?" And that's charming to me.
Yeah, gotta love the Coleman. Well, and some other news, some less sad news. We got some information that Sherlock Holmes 2 is in the works, and they will be releasing that on December 16th, and it's also, you know, going to be done by Guy Ritchie. And then there's also a lot of news of Flash adaptation, and a Superman film is set for 2012. So a lot of A lot of big name stuff coming out. Did you guys see that original Sherlock Holmes movie?
I did not. No.
Oh. Whoa, jinx. For the rest of the episode.
I was excited for it to begin with, but like the more previews and stuff I saw of it, the more I did not want to see it.
Yeah. But yeah, so we can look forward to a sequel to that, so that should be, whatever. And like I said, Flash adaptation and a Superman movie, so that was the two big superhero things that I saw this week. So I always liked the Flash, and I think especially because, do you guys remember the Flash live-action television series that was on in the early 90s? It was ridiculous, but for whatever reason, I remember watching that all the time as a kid, so I kind of have a soft spot in my heart for Flash, so we'll see how they do with that. But and then another Superman movie, forget it.
Yeah. I hate that Superman.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll suck. And then I saw, Mark and I were talking about this weekend, but the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles reboot is being passed to the capable hands of Platinum Dunes. I guess they're going to make another live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, and it looks like the Michael Bay company Platinum Dunes is going to take over. So if you love the high quality output that Platinum Dunes has released so far, I'm sure you will love this. And I don't know. Do kids even still like the Ninja Turtles? I mean, is this even like a bankable thing anymore?
I don't know. I don't think kids like them, but I mean, if Platinum Dunes is going to do it, that implies that it will be sort of a darker type of a thing, I would think. I mean, the Ninja Turtles started out, their comics were, horribly dark and horribly violent, so perhaps that's where they want to take it.
Yeah.
Perhaps they just want to sell toys.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do, because, I mean, as a kid that grew up in the 80s, obviously Ninja Turtles were huge, and that first movie was like, an epic event for kids our age. And, and despite all its pop culture cachet, it's actually a pretty good, if you go back and watch it and you completely forget about, all the hype and the Ninja Turtles phenomenon that's around it, it's actually kind of a cool little, like, B-grade movie. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they do take it in the direction of the comic books and kind of go that darker, grittier edge to it and try to market it towards the late 20s, early 30s kids that grew up with it, or if they're going to try to do it towards today's youth and try to market it that way. So, I don't know. It would be sweet if we got, like, an R-rated Ninja Turtles movie. That would be...
Yeah, I'd be into that.
Lots of tits and blood, but I'm not going to hold my breath for that.
Turtle tits.
And then finally, the last piece of news that I saw this week was Adam Green, the director of Hatchet and Frozen, is going to be directing a movie called Killer Pizza, which is a teen who takes a gig at a pizza delivery joint, which is really the cover for a monster hunting organization. So I thought Hatchet was a piece of shit. I didn't like it at all. But
that's true, though.
But this premise sounds pretty good. I didn't understand what all the hype was about, because like it seems like all these horror fans like suck this guy's dick and like he's the next big thing, and that Hatchet movie was such a shitty movie. I don't know. I didn't see Frozen, but I don't know. This sounds like a pretty decent movie.
Yeah, cool. Frozen just seems like that open water movie, but instead of water, it's ice.
Right. Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to cool stuff on DVD this week. Every week we like...
Kevin, I'm sorry. I have one piece of nerd news I wanted to bring up, and I think it's kind of a sad piece of nerd news, but Guillermo del Toro is no longer directing The Hobbit.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he had to pass on it after all the studio, calamities, I guess. So he's still going to co-write the screenplays, but he's not going to direct. So, but it seems... I don't know. Peter Jackson doesn't seem to hold a grudge or anything, so I don't know. But I was really looking forward to that.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I could really give a shit less about the Lord of the Rings stuff. It's not my wheelhouse at all. Never got into the books. Those movies put me to sleep. But I mean, I understand the fandom that surrounds it. But I love Guillermo del Toro. I mean, I love everything that I've seen directed by him, and I thought he could put a really cool spin on that, and so I was excited about that myself. So yeah, that is sad to hear. Did they make any mention of what Del Toro's next project's going to be?
I haven't heard. I know he like secured the rights to some Lovecraft stuff, and but I don't. You know, I honestly have no idea what he's supposed to do next. Now,
right on.
I'll call him.
Yeah, get him on the line. We'll have him on the podcast next week. Get to the bottom of this shit.
Yeah.
All right, well, now we're going to take a look at some cool stuff on DVD this week. Every week we like to tell you about some of the notable DVD releases that are going to be hitting your shelves. These are the DVDs for the week of June 1st. The first big release, and I'm sure the one that will probably sell the most copies, is the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland comes to DVD and Blu-ray this week. Now, did you guys see this one in the theaters or have any interest in this?
No, I don't care about Tim Burton anymore. He's over with.
I actually did see it in the theater, and I think we might have talked about this before. I thought it was definitely not nearly as bad as I went into thinking it was going to be.
Right. Yeah, I saw it in the theater as well, and I was expecting the worst, and it was pretty terrible, but it wasn't as bad as I was expecting. But I'm sure this will sell a ton of DVDs to the 15-year-old Tim Burton loving girl set, but. You know, worth checking out if you haven't seen it already. Another one that's coming out this week that I actually didn't see in the theaters, but I actually really wanted to, but it got a lot of bad reviews, so I ended up skipping it, was The Wolfman with Benicio del Toro.
Man, you guys, it sucks.
You saw it?
Yeah, it's really not very good. Really? I like the sets and the costumes and stuff. That's cool, but it is fucking boring, and Anthony Hopkins is... awful in it.
Really?
So if you're into seeing Anthony Hopkins acting really, really poorly.
Yeah.
I can recommend no film other than Joe Johnson's The Wolfman.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm a huge fan of werewolf movies. I love the original Universal Wolfman movie with Lon Chaney Jr. So I really wanted to see this because, you know, I always end up seeing werewolf movies one way or the other. And I figured, well, it's got to be better than that wolf with, you know, Jack Nicholson. But but yeah, I'll probably check it out. I'll probably put it in my Netflix queue. And regardless of the bad reviews I've heard, I'm still going to check it out. So just to give it my own take. But yeah, and then I don't know. It must be Clint Eastwood's birthday or something, because like it seems like a whole slew of Clint Eastwood movies are coming to Blu-ray and DVD this week. We've got Kelly's Heroes and Where the Eagles Dare. The Man with No Name trilogy, you know, Fistful of Dollars for a Few Dollars More, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, Absolute Power, The Rookie, Pale Rider, The Enforcer, Sudden Impact, The Gauntlet, Every Which Way But Loose. And it seems like every Clint Eastwood movie you can think of came out on Blu-ray and DVD this month or this week. So if you're a Clint Eastwood fan, you know, go pick those up. I've never been a real big Clint Eastwood fan. I always liked, you know, the Sergio Leone spaghetti westerns that he was in, like that Man with No Name trilogy. But other than that, I mean, Dirty Harry's awesome, and he's got a few good things, but I've never had this like hard on that a lot of, you know, American males seem to have for Clint Eastwood, where they're like, oh, he's the baddest motherfucker on the planet. I never regarded him in quite that light, but you know, he's definitely been in some awesome movies. So if you're a fan of him, you have an endless supply of new DVDs and Blu-rays out this week that you can choose. You guys like Clint Eastwood?
I liked Gran Turismo and Million Dollar Baby a lot, but that's pretty much the only stuff of his I've seen.
Yeah.
So I guess he's batting 1,000 in my book since I've ignored him other than those two movies.
Yeah, I'd say definitely check out you know, the Sergio Leone, you know, spaghetti westerns that he's been in. Those are really awesome.
Cool. I will do that. I've you know, always heard everybody on Earth seems to love them, but I guess I just gave them a stiff arm. I've been ignoring them for no reason.
Yeah. Also this week, Class of Nukem High comes out on Blu-ray, which I was excited to see. That's always been one of my favorite Troma movies. It seems like the Troma team is rolling out a lot of their films onto Blu-ray slowly but surely, and this is another entry into that. You guys seen this movie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, really good. And then... Yeah. Aqua Teen Hunger Force Volume 7 comes out this week. Now, I've really lost track of the show. I used to really, really enjoy it when it was on, you know, originally on Adult Swim, but it seems like I've really lost track. In fact, I didn't even know they were still making new episodes, but apparently they are. Have you guys kept up with the show at all?
No, after that horrible, horrible movie came out, I just wrote these guys off. I absolutely loved them, like, to death up until that movie came out, and then I I just bid them a fond adieu once I saw that piece of crap.
Yeah. Did you see that in the theater?
Yeah, yeah. It played at the Cinema Deluxe here for about a day.
Right.
And I managed to catch it that day.
Yeah, it just seems so stupid. I mean, I don't know how they figured like a show that runs 11 minutes in length and even then is stretching its, you know, comedic value, it would translate to an hour and a half movie. It just seems like the worst idea ever. But yeah, I kind of like you. That was about the time when I just started not keeping track of it, when, you know, I actually had to get a real job and couldn't spend my, you know, days in a dorm room watching that crap. But yeah, so they're still making shows, and Volume 7 is out on DVD this Tuesday. So if you're still a fan, pick it up. And then finally, the last DVD I wanted to mention was something that I am very excited about, which is Slithus is coming to DVD, which I am super excited about. I posted something on the blog about it. It's a movie from the 70s about a mutated sea monster that wreaks havoc in Venice, California. This is the first time that this movie's ever been released on DVD. Code Red, which is a really cool DVD company, is putting it out in its original widescreen format and with some long-lost footage that hasn't been seen in years in it. And so that should be really cool. Prior to this, the only way you could get it was on VHS, which had been long out of print. And I saw it originally. They would air it every once in a while on cable. And yeah, it's totally terrible. I mean, it's like, you know, so bad, but I don't know. I have a nostalgic soft spot for it, so I will definitely be picking this up on Tuesday when it comes out. So get ready, guys. I think you might see an appearance of Slithus on the podcast in the upcoming weeks.
Sweet.
Sounds fun. Yeah.
All right, so that does it with the DVDs that are coming out this week. And we are going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and look at the 1973 undead biker movie Psychomania. So stick around.
And the world never knew his name, but the chosen few know of his fame. Come join his company, riding free. He really got it on. He rode that sweet machine just like a bomb. He felt her in his soul, but no one there could find him. So he left those fools behind him with a feeling that they could not understand. He took away his life with his own hand. But the chosen few know of his fame. Come join his company, riding free. They tried to tie him down, to make him place his 2 feet on the ground. How could they treat him so? To ride was more than living, but taking more than giving. They tried to clip his wings just like a fly. So instead of standing still, he chose to die.
All right, welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. The first movie that we have this week is Psychomania from 1973. Now, the date on this movie is kind of ambiguous. It says 1973 on IMDb, but there are some people that say it's from 1971. Some people say it's from 1972. But I'm going to go with the official IMDb of 1973, and we'll go ahead and say that's correct. But yeah, it's a British movie from, we'll say, 1973, about a group of bikers that terrorize the English countryside, led by a cat named Tom, who looks kind of like Peter Noon from Herman's Hermits, with the, you know, leather jacket on. He leads a group of bikers called the Living Dead, who, like I said, just go around town and, you know, basically just cause shit whenever they can, terrorizing the uptight British people of their town. Tom's mom is a widower, and she dabbles in the occult. They have a swank, nice mod house somewhere in England. They live with their butler by the name of Shadwell, and we learn that his family like I said, dabbles in the occult. He finds out that there is a way to obtain immortality, and the way to do it, I guess, is just to believe that you want to die and that you will come back. He learns this through some sort of psychedelic ritual involving a frog, which I didn't really quite get. But anyway, so once he learns the secret to immortality, he commits suicide by driving his bike off a bridge and is buried sitting on his bikes face up. And, you know, his gang of bikers, you know, have a nice little funeral for him. And then sure enough, he blasts out of the ground back from the dead, only to convince the rest of his biker gang that, you know, all they have to do is commit suicide, really believe that they'll come back. And of course, that's what they do. So, one by one, the bikers in his gang go ahead and commit suicide, then come back from the dead. And then he leads an army of undead bikers to have, you know, wreak havoc on the English countryside. So that, in a nutshell, is Psychomania. What did you guys think of this one?
Oh, I thought this was awesome. I wasn't really sure what to expect. I had heard the name in some books and stuff, but I was excited to learn what it was actually about. I love those motorcycle helmets. I love when he bursts out of the ground on that motorcycle. I thought the chase scene was really good. I don't know. It was another one of those that I just like put it in and had my attention the whole time. And
yeah, it's weird because, you know, this often gets lumped in as a horror movie, and just by hearing that description, it sounds kind of like a zombie movie or something. Yeah. But I would hesitate to classify this as a horror movie at all. I mean, when they come back from the dead, they still, you know, just look like themselves. There's not a lot of gore or makeup effects at all. It's more of, you know, it falls more in with the late 60s biker movies more than any horror movie. So it's interesting for sure.
Yeah, I totally hated this movie.
Really?
Yeah. And it may just be that I hate British people. I just hate them so much.
Yeah.
And they were all up and down in this movie. I mean, you couldn't throw a stone without hitting a British person in this. And,
right.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, they were like a gang. And, you know, I understand that when you're in a motorcycle gang, you want to go terrorize your crappy little town and not go groceries. But then when they became immortal and had super strength and could not be hurt, all they did was just knock over groceries and shit.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I couldn't get behind it.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird movie in the fact that, like you said, that you don't really get what the motivation is other than just to be, you know, assholes and to be, you know, just thugs and cause havoc. There is that really cool scene where they ride their motorcycles through the grocery store, and I thought that was pretty fun. And when they were driving around in, like, the village square and chasing around girls in hot pants and knocking strollers over and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, you really don't have any empathy towards these guys, especially the lead guy, Tom. He's just a total, you know, spoiled asshole and just wants to cause trouble. He has a girlfriend, Abby, in the movie, who's the reluctant one of the group. She's not quite sure about this whole suicide pact, and she doesn't really want to go along with any of it. And she actually lies to him and says that she has committed suicide and come back when she hasn't. So there's also that kind of playing out. But yeah, I think some of the main selling points for me in this movie and the stuff that I like, kind of what you mentioned, Mark, the costumes in this are great. I love the motorcycle gang's look with the leather jackets, and they have those awesome helmets with the visors that come down that look like skulls. I thought those were really cool. And so that instantly drew me in. And then some of the more psychedelic elements of this were also pretty interesting, which again kind of falls in line with the biker movies of the time. You know, there's that weird kind of scene where, like I said, he does that weird seance kind of thing in his father's room where he puts on his glasses and sees the frog and trips out and learns the secret to immortality. There's a lot of, like, ambiguously weird psychedelic occult stuff that happens. But for the most part, it's just guys on bikes causing mayhem.
True.
Yeah, I thought that as far as gangs go, I mean, we've talked about a lot of gangs on this show, and I thought these guys were by far the wussiest. I mean, not only are they British, which makes them really wussy, but they had, like the name of their gang, which is the Living Dead, was, like, written in cursive in pink on the back of their jackets.
Right.
And then they all had embroidered their names on their lapel, which, I mean, I'm sure they didn't, you know, I mean, they had to do that themselves. A bunch of this gang just sitting around stitching together their names. And right. One of the guy's names is Bertram.
And yeah.
Under no circumstances would I ever be afraid of a man named Bertram. So.
Yeah, but they counteract that with some guys named Hatchet, Chopped Meat, and Gash, though. So
yeah, I would definitely be afraid of Chopped Meat.
Right. I don't know which one it was, but one of them looked a lot like Danny Bonaducci, too. That little redheaded kid. He was definitely the least intimidating of the group, but I don't think he was Bertram. I think yeah, that was Hatchet.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and he had the best one of the best suicides too because he just laid under a car. But yeah, that was a really great scene when they all find out, because first of all, I thought it was hilarious that they were all so willing to just follow this plan of commit suicide and you'll come back to life. I mean, I think that would be a pretty hard sell even on, you know, idiot biker kids. But yeah, I mean, just, yeah, go ahead, kill yourself. I promise. You'll come back. I promise. But yeah, they have this whole montage scene of them all committing suicide in various creative ways. You know, guys, jump off buildings, and one guy, puts a bunch of weights around and jumps in like 2 feet of water.
I liked the sky that somebody, doesn't pull their parachute when they skydive. And...
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was cool that they actually did like the skydiving stuff. And I thought the chase scene, like I said, was pretty excellent.
Yeah, there was some cool motorcycle chases for sure.
Yeah, I just felt like they worked with what they had really well.
Yeah, there was also a really funny part in that chase scene. Or I don't know if it's the chase scene that you're talking about, but there's one scene where Tom and I think Abby are on their bikes and they're terrorizing a couple guys in a pickup truck.
Oh, I don't think that was Abby. I think that was the other girl. But
oh, the other girl. Yeah. I love how the truck goes off a cliff and immediately bursts into flames.
Yeah.
for no apparent reason.
The thing was, I was like, you know, it was rolling down the hill and I was like, geez, that was crazy. And then it blew up and I didn't see it coming for some reason. So
yeah,
I was horrified.
Right. One thing that did really annoy me is when they are having Tom's funeral, and they have that hippie guy singing
that terrible song.
Oh, God.
And it's so long.
Yeah. That was by far the worst, probably one of the worst parts of that movie.
The world didn't know his name.
Yeah, it's like this really terrible, like, folk song about, you know, ride free, brother.
Yeah, I think we should pause so that everybody can listen to the entire song.
Yeah, during that whole scene, I just kept having, like, scary flashbacks of Knight Riders. And I kept thinking Tom Savini would show up and just... Well, actually, it would have been good. Tom Savini probably would have showed up and just kicked ass on all these wussies.
Yeah.
Because he was good at riding motorcycles. And he actually had a motorcycle instead of a weird little moped like these guys were driving. I would hardly classify what the Living Dead had as motorcycles.
They had some pretty sweet bikes for the time. I mean, they weren't Harley Davidsons or anything. But, you know, it's Britain. Cut them some slack.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
I'm sure Parker's more than willing to cut those Brits some slack.
I also loved, and I kind of mentioned this at the beginning, but the way Tom and his mom's house is decorated is some of the best, like, groovy design that I've seen in a while. They've got, like, all these different colored throw pillows everywhere and just weird, you know, 60s furniture, and I don't know. It's pretty awesome.
That's true.
But, yeah. If you don't like British people, and Parker, I can fully understand your dislike of the Brits, because, you know, there are some things about British culture and just British people in general that do get on my nerves, but I think it was passable in this movie just because of the sheer weirdness of this movie and the, you know, the theme. But one thing that I thought was, you know, which goes across the board in all British movies, not very attractive ladies. Even when he, like, goes into that bar and, like, tries to pick up the, you know, those dames when he first comes back from the Living Dead, those girls were not attractive.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. And then that main Abby girl looked sort of like a mix between David Bowie and David Foley whenever he wore drag.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. But yeah, so this movie was released in the United States under the alternate title The Death Wheelers, and made its way around, you know, drive-ins and movie houses, but never received any kind of following whatsoever. But then it was released on video in the 80s and, you know, kind of picked up a cult following. But I think it's a lot more popular in England than it is here. But it's funny, I watched an interview with the star of the movie, the guy that actually played Tom, and he really hates this movie. And, like, I mean, he's, like, gone as far as to, like, disown it and stuff. And he said it, you know, he just said it's a total piece of shit, and he wishes, like, prints of it were burned. I don't know if he's just, like, hates the movie or is just embarrassed to be a part of it, but yeah, totally disowned it. And it's funny, too, because the director, Don Sharp, the guy that directed this movie, he was actually fairly well known prior to making this movie as, you know, director for the Hammer series of horror movies. He did a lot of that stuff. He also directed a lot of British television, like stuff like The Avengers and stuff like that. So he was a fairly well-known director, but I think everyone involved could agree that this was kind of like a cash-in. They were trying to kind of cash in on the biker movies that were really popular at the time. I mean, this was around the time of Easy Rider and stuff like that. And then, of course, you know, with the whole returning from the living, you know, and their name, The Living Dead, which was obviously taken from Night of the Living Dead, you know, trying to cash in on that whole thing. So they were trying to, like, meld a bunch of genres into once. And, you know, there's also that rock and roll element to it. But, yeah, I think it was definitely just kind of a cash in and not a lot of artistic merit. But I still think it's a fun movie to watch, like Mark had mentioned, with the costume design and some of the chase scenes. I think there's enough entertainment value here to get something out of it.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, I know that Parker hated it, but I put it on not really knowing what to expect, and it held my attention. And I, you know, didn't really understand all of it, like the frogs, but
yeah,
and why they have to wear that, like, Tropical Trends necklace to life. But, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's fine.
Yeah, well, that might also be part of it, is I had really high expectations for it based on the Netflix description of it.
Cause, I mean, yeah.
I mean, I was like, Living Dead, motorcycle gangs, frogs, this is going to be outstanding. And it
yeah.
just wasn't, for me at least.
Yeah, one thing that people have mentioned online, and I didn't even think about this, but it is pretty funny, is they were asking, you know, does the invincibility and, like, the Return of the Dead also apply not just to the motorcyclist, but to the motorcycle itself? Because, you know, they say, like, they crash their bikes and all this stuff, and then the bikes are always in brand new condition in the next scene. So apparently this, you know, occult, you know, stuff not only translates to you, but also your bike as well. And your clothes, too.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, what happens if they get mangled or something?
Right.
Do they just have to walk around for eternity mangled?
No, apparently you come back full force.
When, though? Just instantly?
When you kiss the frog.
Oh.
But yeah, so I think that just about wraps up Psychomania, unless you guys have any further comments on it.
No, I'm eager to be done with it.
Okay.
Forever.
All right, so that wraps up Psychomania. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about the 1986 movie Neon Maniac, so stick around.
Are inside the Golden Gate Bridge, one. Two, that they only come out at night. That they're responsible for the death of 15 or more kids and 3 of my police officers.
Let me ruin your evening, the stranger said to me. Your new lover, my old
they're young.
Lover.
She said, come on, Sue, it's great.
They think they're going to live forever.
What are you doing? Come on,
get out. You don't want to play with us. You want to fool around.
But they're in for a terrible surprise. Now, there are 12 new reasons.
Over here!
To be afraid of the dark.
They're after me.
And every one of them is a killer. Introducing, in diabolical order, Axe, Hangman, Doc, Biker, Slash, Juice, Samurai, Mohawk, Archer, Soldier. These are the Neon Maniacs. They live so others may die. Neon Maniacs.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, Episode 9. We are now going to discuss the 1986 film Neon Maniacs. This is a movie about 12, I would say, neon maniacs that live near the Golden Gate Bridge, which doesn't make sense for reasons we'll explain in a moment. They live near or under this bridge and just kill people sometimes, but this girl sees them killing people, and they aren't into that. The girl is Leilani Sarrell. She was in Basic Instinct, but, you know, not now. She's in this movie now. So she sees all of her friends get killed and goes to the police and says, these neon maniacs killed my friends, and they all have hilarious names, and I found these trading cards with them on them. And the police don't believe her, and I would say hilarity ensues. They haunt her, and they get a few more good kills in, and they all have these really boiled down names like Hangman and Samurai and
Archer,
yeah,
Decapitator,
Thing,
Slasher, yeah.
I like Thing, actually. I think Thing was my favorite.
Right.
So yeah, they're all very colorful characters, and people keep finding slime, and this eventually leads to a showdown. Now, the reason it doesn't make sense that these guys live near this bridge is because their one weakness in the world is water.
Right.
And I just wouldn't pick under a bridge if that were my weakness.
Right.
But, there's a really funny, like, raid on the Neon Maniacs compound where all the police go in with squirt guns and stuff. So,
yeah.
I don't know. What did you guys think of this movie?
Well, like you said, I thought it was weird that they decided to camp out near water. I mean, besides just living under the bridge, like, they're on a small piece of land that's completely surrounded by water and where it rains all the time. Like, just a poor, poor choice of real estate ownership.
It's horrible. I guess, I don't know, maybe, I guess if people are thinking, well, they live near water, so we shouldn't splash water on them because they're probably used to that.
They're probably like from, that. Like, the same planet as the aliens from Signs, I would think.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm sure the whole pitch of this movie and the whole marketing behind it was like, because this was obviously, you know, 1986. It was the height of, you know, the slasher craze. And they're like, you know, if you thought one killer was crazy, I got 12 for you. And they and yeah, in the way they designed these guys, you got the samurai guy, you got the hangman guy, the archer guy. They all have their like unique methods of killing, and you know they're all very mutant looking. I'm sure the makers of this movie had a huge you know, merchandising campaign in mind with action figures and trading cards and
since it literally starts off with this guy finding the Neon Maniacs trading cards.
Yeah, and as far as I can tell, none of that ever came to fruition, because I looked on eBay and I didn't see any corresponding merchandise to go with the film. But I'm sure that they had grand plans for, you know, a Saturday morning spin-off cartoon with all these 12 neon maniacs and stuff. But I don't understand where the neon comes into play. I mean, I get the maniac part of it.
That slime that they find is neon.
Well, first of all, you'd have to refer to it the way that they refer to it in the movie, which is gook.
Yeah, they do say gook, which I was a little offended by, but...
Right. Yeah, every time they saw the slime, they were like, ugh, it's gook.
Ugh. Yeah, it was a different time then, though. So
right.
when I was going to watch this movie, I was going to get it on Netflix, but I just did it like a real quick search to see if I could download it, and in my eagerness to download it, I picked a link and was like, all right, cool, this link works. It's a direct download. This is going to be great. I'm going to see this movie. But I didn't try it out or anything. And when I sat down today to watch it, I realized it was in Spanish. So I was like real upset. I was like, oh, no, you know, this is terrible. This always happens to me. I'm horrible. And I was, you know, so I was like real bummed out. But it turned out that my wife speaks Spanish. So she translated it all for me while we were watching it. So after any time anybody would speak, she would tell me what they said. But she only took 2 semesters at community college, so they were very loose translations. So, like, she'd be like, oh, this guy said something about how he's scared of monsters. And now this guy's saying something about water. I don't know. Maybe they're going to go to the cops. I'm not for sure. And stuff like that.
Yeah, that sounds almost better.
Yeah, it worked out pretty well. I could follow it pretty well. I mean, I think. Yeah. But then I also realized, as we were gearing up, as we were like connecting to Skype and stuff earlier, that I, in my eagerness to download this movie, I also tried to download it on a torrent, and that totally worked. And I just realized that I have that as well. And I bet that that is in English. And I'm really bummed out now.
Those are the perils you get into when you deal in piracy, son.
True.
That's true. That's what they should put on those don't pirate our movies before you go to the theater. They should just have a picture of me trying to make sense of a Spanish film.
Right.
And shrugging. But it worked out.
So this was really a launching pad for a lot of the people. Alan Hayes went on to be in Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Like I said, Sorrell went on to be in Basic Instinct. You got the guy from Wishmaster. Andrew Divoff was Doc, one of the Neon Maniacs.
Okay.
So, really a nice batch of, you know, a real star-studded cast here.
Yeah.
Also part of the cast is a guy named P.R. Paul, and I work at a newspaper, and that's the kind of nickname that I would give somebody who sent me a lot of press releases. So yeah. I was excited to see that.
I thought it was going to be Prince Paul, but I was disappointed as well. Also, the director of this movie was the cinematographer on a movie that I feel like I talk about all the time called Squirm. So probably have to watch that. Joseph, I can only assume it's Mangini.
I think we'll go ahead with that assumption.
Okay. Yeah, so I don't know. I thought this movie was a lot of fun. I was expecting more slime, though. And I definitely wish I had some Neon Maniacs action figures.
Yeah, I love the fact that this movie culminates at a Battle of the Bands / dance / costume party. Just because of the Battle of the Bands, we've got the Outlaw Boys featuring our protagonist, Steven, which is like this slick 80s power pop band, going up against Jaded, the heavy metal warriors of San Francisco at the time. But yeah, that Battle of the Band scene was pretty hilarious. Now, I didn't understand. Now, was this was a school function, am I correct? This Battle of the Band?
That is correct.
And they were drinking beers, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that's also correct.
There was a lot of casual teen drinking in this movie, like when he spends the night at Natalie's house and she offers him a beer.
Also a lot of sex on the floor of the school.
Right, yeah, exactly. While being pursued by Neon Maniac.
Yeah.
Let's just take a break and have sex. We'll figure this out. Yeah.
This'll work.
Yeah. One character I liked/hated a lot was Paula, the little 13-year-old girl played by a 30-year-old woman that was like really big into horror movies and kind of tagged along with Steve and Natalie on their misadventures. I like the fact that, you know, she ate C-3PO cereal and that she had a bunch of latex masks in her room and stuff, but something about her just really bugged the shit out of me. I think it was the fact
she was, like, talking to her masks and stuff. That was weird.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, she was supposed to be, like, 13 years old, but that actress, I was well into her 30s, I'm thinking. But they're like, just throw a sideways baseball cap on her and she'll look 13.
Excellent. Yeah, another movie that I enjoyed, even though it had a really... well, I guess I would say multiple really fucking horrible songs. Parker, I don't know if you got to experience this, but the DVD menu song, which is also, I think, the theme, is just awful.
Oh,
and
man.
Then, the Battle of the Band songs are also
goddamn just terrible. And I love it that this movie just starts off with just black credits with this terrible like Casio keyboard opening music.
Yeah, it's horrendous.
Ugh.
Yeah, the only part that I got to see that was in English were the songs, the Battle of the Band songs.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I was pretty upset that the whole thing was not in Spanish. I was hoping that they would just...
those for your wife?
Yeah, I translated
back
that
in Spanish?
Yeah, I was, like, singing them to her.
Yeah.
Swooning.
I can switch to Spanish.
I was hoping that they would have inserted, like, some mariachi music into those scenes instead.
Yeah, I love the opening line of the Outlaws song was, "Let me ruin your evening."
Yeah.
So I thought that was apropos. I also loved when the Neon Maniacs busted into the Battle of the Bands and everyone started freaking out. Steven from the stage yells, "Don't run, use your squirt guns."
Yeah.
Which I think is good advice for anybody in any, you know, scary situation.
One thing I really liked about this movie, and I like totally freaked out and like paused the movie and started like jumping up and down while watching it, while they're in the school early in the film and they're like all hanging out and talking about stuff, on one of the walls there's a huge sign that says Panda Sale.
Yeah. We talked about that while we were watching it, and it's like $250 you get a panda or something.
Yeah, and like the sign also says that like they can finance you and all stuff. Yeah. Like this.
Oh, I gotta look for that again.
Yeah, you gotta check it out.
That sounds
I'll try intense. To get a screenshot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good school to be selling pandas on the side.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have loved to have bought a panda.
Pandas so my band can go to the championships.
I also like that one of the maniacs, his special power is he has a gun. And he just busts into that school dance shooting. Like, it seemed like they all had not so much powers, but just weapons. And one of them was just a machine gun. He was the army neon maniac. But yeah, he just busts into the Battle of the Bands dance and just starts shooting up the place.
See, I liked Thing because I really felt he was the only one that was actually a monster.
Yeah, the rest were just mutants with weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were all like pretty generic Cenobites, I thought.
Yeah, that came up as well. Excellent. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up Maniacs, Neon Maniacs. Unless you guys want to sing a couple more songs from the Battle of the Bands.
I think I'll pass.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about Parker's burning.
I got diseases.
Thank you. burning.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. We are going to talk about a hidden gem of a slasher movie called The Burning from 1981. This movie was co-written, or the story was anyway, by Harvey Weinstein, the guy who would go on to do, you know, be one of the main dudes in Miramax and launch the careers of Kevin Smith and Quentin Tarantino and do stuff like that. But yeah, the film centers around a summer camp, as most slasher movies tend to do. And there's a real angry, sort of mean caretaker that works at the summer camp. So a few of the kids get together and decide that they're going to scare him with a severed head, which is a good thing to scare somebody with, I suppose. And so they go into his room, put this severed head that has candles in the eye sockets on his night table next to his empty whiskey bottles. And then they proceed to knock on the windows from the outside, wake him up. He gets really scared, which I guess is to be expected, and a hysterical sort of Inspector Gadget-esque sequence happens where he knocks the candles over onto his bed, and then the flames spread to the gasoline can he has right next to his bed. He goes up in flames and then runs outside, falls down a hill, and from there the cops come and take his charred body away. We find out that he lives through this, but he will be horribly burned forever. And 5 years later, after a lot of recouping, he's let loose on the world to, you know, go back to his life and become a drunk, angry guy again. At least that's what the doctors are expecting. Little do they know that he is bent on revenge. Revenge on people who may or may not have actually done that. He goes to a totally different camp and tries to get revenge on totally different people. So I don't know how that constitutes revenge, but, I mean, he's getting out a lot of aggression. Also, he practices his revenge by killing a prostitute, which is probably the way that we would all practice getting revenge, I suppose, right, if we were going to do it. There's a chapter that was cut out of The Count of Monte Cristo where he just practices getting revenge on a hooker. And so he goes to the summer camp and waits and waits and waits and waits and waits a lot until he finally, about at the 55-minute mark, decides to kill somebody. And then after that kill, people just start dropping like flies and sort of. And mayhem ensues at that point. And also this film has a lot of cool people in it. Mostly George Costanza is in
right.
it. And with a full head of hair and a lot of livelihood about him.
Yeah.
And so during the middle, between about the 7 minute mark and the 55-minute mark, we get to know George Costanza and his fellow campers fairly well. They have a lot of hijinks going on where they sell condoms and porn to each other and get into fights about girls and shoot each other with BB guns.
Yeah, classic summer camp stuff.
Yeah, classic fun. Old fashioned fun.
Right.
Yeah, how do you guys feel about The Burning?
I loved it. I was a big fan of this movie before the podcast. I had seen it several times. But only recently had I kind of found out about it. It sounds, you know, by the description, you know, it sounds kind of like a Friday the 13th remake, although Harvey Weinstein claims that he wrote this story before seeing even before Friday the 13th had ever been released. But it is, you know, very similar to a lot of the summer camp slasher movies of the 80s. But I think it's very well done. I think this was actually the first movie ever to be released under the Miramax imprint, which is, you know, historic in its own right. But a very cool cast. Like you said, it's got Jason Alexander in it. It's got Brian Backer, who I really liked. He was Mark Ratner in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And I'm a big fan of that movie, so I thought that was cool. It's got Fisher Stevens, who, you know, he was in Hackers and a bunch of other stuff, and he's a real skinny kid in this. And it's got Holly Hunter in it as well. So it's got a lot of people that went on to fairly lucrative acting careers, and for a lot of them, this was their first movie, including Jason Alexander. But yeah, I think it's an actual, you know, above average slasher movie, and there are a lot of really cool kill scenes in it. Tom Savini was the makeup and special effects guy on this movie. He actually turned down working on Friday the 13th Part 2 so he could work on this movie, which I find interesting. I don't know if it was a money thing or if he actually just had, more faith in this movie. But it's sad that this movie isn't as well known and respected, I think, as a lot of the slasher movies at the time, like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff like that, because I think it definitely belongs on that echelon, because, you know, I think it holds up to this day in that category.
Yeah, yeah, I'd never heard of it. My friend Faith told me to do it for the podcast, and like I saw on Netflix that Jason Alexander was in it, and I said, yes, I will do this movie. And yeah, but it's really, really super good. I mean, it kind of drags a little bit on account of there's no murdering for a long, long time.
Right.
But I mean, you're not bored throughout that time, because I mean, you got Jason Alexander doing all kinds of wacky shenanigans, and you know, the kid from Fast Times doing some stuff, and you know, it's fun. So yeah, but I really enjoyed it, and also that time wherein nobody gets murdered super pays off on this raft massacre scene.
Oh yes.
I was going to say, this was another one from the Video Nasties list, and that scene was actually what put that movie on here.
Yeah, that's like the most infamous scene from this movie. There's a scene where all these kids they build a makeshift raft to head back to camp, you know, to try to get some help, and then they come upon one of their lost canoes, only to be brutally hacked by the garden shear wielding Cropsey.
Another just little fun thing that I thought was kind of awesome is The Burning was actually the working title of Don't Go in the House.
Yeah.
Yes, I saw that.
I think that's pretty cool.
Definitely.
You know, we go to great lengths to really tie everything together here. And
yeah.
I'm glad that it pays off so well.
Speaking of which, Fisher Stevens was in the Super Mario Brothers movie with Dennis Hopper.
There you go.
No big deal.
With that, good night, folks. That's the podcast.
Nailed it.
I thought it was hilarious that the bully in the in this movie, the guy Glazer, he seems like he would be the kind of kid that would get like his ass kicked at any other camp, but since he's surrounded by like all these scrawny like Jewish nerds, that he's the tough guy of this group. But he seemed like, I don't know, he didn't seem very tough to me. I could have beat him up.
I think he was probably a lot tougher than the Living Dead, though. He probably could have taken all those guys, I think.
Yeah.
At least Bertram. At least. But, yeah, I thought this movie was cool because I thought, like, the guy's name is Cropsey, the evil maniac. And I've always heard of there being, like, a Cropsey sort of urban legend where people in New York and New Jersey try not to travel too deep into the woods. Otherwise, the Cropseys will get them, which is something I first heard of on a little MTV show called Downtown, which is like all good MTV shows, only lasted about 7 episodes. But there was an episode all about the Cropseys, and I thought that was a cool urban legend.
Like, yeah, well, I guess that's where the story originated, was a real kind of urban legend that they told, like you said, at summer camps in upstate New York and New Jersey. And I guess that's where, you know, the Weinstein brothers first heard this, and Tony Malam, who came up with the story. It's all based on, you know, one of those stories that got passed around, and I guess it's still told to this day amongst campers to scare their fellow campmates. But yeah, I liked all the kids in this camp, like any good camp movie from the 80s, are perpetually horny. There's lots of really good teenage sex talk, which is to some hilarious effect sometimes. Like, there's one scene where all the girls are talking about like which guy they'd want to have sex with, and I thought that was hilarious because A, they have a terrible group of guys to choose from. I mean, either they're just really nerdy or really ugly or George Costanza. Oh, and by the way, this is, if you've ever wanted to see Jason Alexander's ass, this is the movie to do it, because there's a mooning scene, and yeah, you get a full eye of Jason Alexander's brown eye, so it's a world-class movie for that, if nothing else.
Yeah, they talk about sex a lot in this. And there's a scene where Jason Alexander buys everybody porn and condoms and stuff, and I thought it was funny that he was clearly not the master of his domain. But
yeah, I like in that scene when he gives his, you know, he's like, I got a Playboy for you, and he's like, I got a Hustler for you, and he gives it to Fisher Stevens, and the guy's like, like, Woodstock, what do you want with Hustler? You're too small. Like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that guy's penis is so small that he cannot masturbate properly, apparently.
But he's like, I could understand if you wanted Playboy, but Hustler, Jesus, you're too small for that.
These pornos are making me horny.
But yeah.
Oh, goodness. There's also a scene that I absolutely hated. I started yelling at my TV. It's where the group of kids who go off on the raft to get help before they are brutally hacked up, they're saying goodbye to the kids who choose to remain at this second site, and they say goodbye to each other for about 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, just standing there, see ya, see you later, see ya, see you guys later, see
well,
you.
It's funny, in Psychomania, at the beginning, when they're having that seance, they say goodbye for like 5 minutes, too.
Goodbye, Mom.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of that had to do, they were probably just stalling, because when they're paddling away on that makeshift raft, it's obvious that they're not fucking going anywhere on that thing. Like, we're supposed to believe that they paddled like miles upstream on that fucking thing with these makeshift oars and stuff, because clearly they could not move that thing at all with those like homemade oars that they had, because like every time they showed them paddling, they just were not moving at all. Which I was like, and then like obviously somebody got behind them and just like gave them a little push before the shot started to show that there was any kind of movement. But yeah, I thought that was hilarious. There's also a really repetitive line where that one girl, you know, strips naked and goes skinny dipping with that that one guy, and then she gets out and she's like, you know, her clothes are gone, and she just keeps repeating like, hey, where are my clothes? Come on, guys. Oh, come on. Where are my clothes? Where is everybody? Come on, guys. Like 5 minutes of her just over and over, and I'm like, somebody please stab her in the face with some gardening shears.
Foreshadowing.
Right.
Yeah. Also, Cropsy, near the end, you get the good, like, big reveal that you've been waiting for, because this guy's, like, horribly burned, and, you know, you're just waiting to see him, and when you do, it's a nightmare. And I thought that there was a good payoff there, too.
Yeah, really good. I mean, you know, Tom Savini, obviously, makeup effects were top-notch for the time. And that's the thing, it's like, that's why I don't understand why this movie isn't more respected and talked about in the horror community. I guess because it didn't have, you know, a barrage of sequels, and it just doesn't, the killer doesn't have that name recognition like Freddy or Jason or Michael Myers. But yeah, I mean, it seems like this fits right there in that pantheon of horror movies, and I think it should be kind of regarded as a classic in that respect. But yeah, for whatever reason, it just doesn't get the respect that those other ones do.
Probably because of the giant scissors. Like, they're not as marketable as a machete is, or right, a razor glove.
Or a handful of scissors.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, this film often gets kind of knocked for ripping off Friday the 13th, which may not be the case. But also, you know, it's kind of interesting with the whole burnt killer thing. You got to wonder if Nightmare on Elm Street might have taken some cues from this movie.
Yeah, we should call Wes Craven and tell him to apologize for plagiarizing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, all right. I guess that's it for The Burning. Our burning will have cleared up at the end of this conversation. So we'll be back and we'll say goodbye to you.
All right, so that just about wraps up episode number 9 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank you for listening. Be sure to keep your eyes on the blog, which is jfdpodcast.blogspot.com, for all the info and latest goings-ons in the world of Junk Food Dinner. And, of course, that's where you can find our podcast as well. Make sure to check us out on Podcast Alley. Just search Junk Food Dinner on Podcast Alley. You can listen, subscribe, and most importantly, vote or comment on our podcast. That's a really good way to get new people to listen to the show and spread the word about Junk Food Dinner. Also, if you can't get enough of us, you can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and you know, we'll keep you abreast of all the what's happening in the world of Junk Food Dinner. Also, if you live in the Ohio area and would like to attend the first annual Junk Food Dinner party, hit us up on Facebook and we'll give you details on how you can do that. But in the meantime, please feel free to send us a message on the via Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the show, or if you have any recommendations for movies you'd like us to watch, or theme episodes you'd like to see us do in the future. Please hit us up there and let us know. But yeah, just keep your eyes on the blog. We'll start getting these things out on a regular basis. Sorry for the lapse last week, but we should be chugging along with an episode a week like usual. And yeah, so next week we're going to get into three more piles of junk for you. We got the classic Hong Kong Kung Fu movie Drunken Master from 1978, starring Jackie Chan. We've got the campy horror movie Spookies from 1986. And also from 1986, we take a look at the very first direct-to-video movie, Truth or Dare. So that should be a good time. So stick around and check us out next week for those movies. And we will see you next time on Junk Food Dinner. Adios, everybody. I didn't need you guys at all for that.
I was gonna remind people that we're having our exclusive interview with Guillermo del Toro next week. So be sure to tune in for that amid controversy regarding The Hobbit.
Awesome.
But you talked too fast. I didn't get in there.
I'm sorry. You should have just blown your rape whistle into the microphone. That's my cue to stop.
Heineken? Fuck that shit! Pabst Blue Ribbon!